Okay. So, as I said, I talk about everything. Bulbul is not here, so that's why I said elasticity in the title. So I don't know why she probably run away. Bob also run away. It's also for him. Okay, so we don't have controversy there. I don't have to give an introduction on granular materials because I don't have time. What I want to say is I will talk about jam-packed systems and I will take away every complications which you can imagine. I will remove friction, I will remove non-spherical particles, I will remove non-linearity in the contact model. There is a non-linearity, namely the contact, no contact thing, but the contact is a linear elastic spring. Okay, and I have no walls, so it's a cube with parallel boundary conditions. Okay, and for this talk, I completely ignore dynamics, jiggling, granular temperature, grounding motion, however you call it. And that's not important. So what remains is microstructure, delatency, anisotropy, and history. These are things which you still have to consider. Okay, I don't have to explain particle simulations. Discrete element methods, that's how the engineers call it, molecular dynamics, it's the same algorithm. And a packing, typical packing I'm talking about, and where the conclusions which we draw or the model which we come up with, the model is inspired by such simulations. I don't give you the details of the simulations, I want to talk about the model idea. Okay, but this is how they look like. They are polydispersed in order to avoid crystallization. So we talk about a disordered system, as far as we can say, it's never partially ordered also, because that would be a completely different phenomenology then. Okay, and you don't have to look at the numbers. Now, if you believe me that I have removed everything complicated which I can, so the question is there something non-trivial remaining? I hope so. And that, as far as I can see, the microstructure of the packing is the only non-trivial thing which is remaining now. The only.
I'm confused by when you say all complexities are removed.
All those which I can.
But what does that mean?
Oh, I shouldn't have used the word complexity, by the way. All complications removed, I said.
Okay. can you give us an example of what you mean by complicated?
No friction. No, linear contact model. Oh, maybe that was just when you...
In the model. Okay.
Yeah.
The simplest model you can...
And for the Gedanken experiment, which I will show you, you don't need all these complications. Okay. And if you have a microstructure, then you have to think about how does it look under different protocols. That's practically what the talk is about. Okay, one protocol which is highly accepted, I think, is tapping. So you prepare your experiments and some others prepare the experiments. In an A-terminal system, tapping replaces annealing. In a terminal system, you have annealing if you wait long enough, if you temper the system, that's equivalent. Okay, there is one other thing which is accessible only to soft particle systems. Namely, you can do overcompression. You squeeze the sample isotropically, and that's the point. Tapping is not isotropic because you tap from one side, like Corey has shown you, but on the other hand, the waves and the shocks are going through the system, so maybe it's isotropic. I classify tapping as isotropic. Overcompression definitely is isotropic because I control the boundaries. I control the strain. And then I have density, volume fraction. When I say density, I mean volume fraction all the time, as a function of time. And this is now the preparation protocol. And everyone who does simulations, I will ask, what protocol did you follow? Which strain rate for initial compression below jamming did you follow? Did you relax your system? What is the strain rate? What is the maximum density you reach? Okay, and then we actually go down to lower density. And on this preparation protocol, we have packings which have a microstructure like yours, which are just below jamming, and we have a lot of packings which are above jamming, and those we relax again. Relaxing means I take away the kinetic energy such that I'm sure I have a elastic stable system. Okay, so I have a set of isotropically prepared packings at the same density, some of them, but they are different. So. And that's already the first protocol history dependence which you can imagine. I skip those, and that looks like this. So you compress, color is, that was the relaxation. color is number of contacts. So this was below jamming, that was why you saw dark blue. Now you see color, because we have a lot of contacts. Okay, and when we go back, we go below jamming again.
Those are polylies, first part, right?
Yes. Okay, and now it's unjammed here. Okay, so that was the protocol. So you have isotropic compression, and you can do shear. There are two types of shear which you can do, but I only show as an example this one. Okay, I come back to shear later. Now, the main experiment, first experiment you can do now with some of these well-prepared packings, they have a history already. One of the experiments you can do now is cyclic compression, isotropic cyclic loading and unloading. Okay, and you do that. In principle, this is what the one which you saw. But anyway, what the simulations show you, when I do isotropic cyclic compression, this is the number of cycles. Then the jamming density, the unjamming density actually, the density when I go down and when the system unjams, is logarithmically slow increasing, and it's actually reaching, it's converging to a maximum. I mean, the fit function has a maximum. It's not continuing forever. Whether the fit is good or not, it's slow. Okay, and that means.
How do you decide
the
system
is done? When the coordination number goes below six. Yeah, the real coordinate, the well-defined coordination number, because then it's really the exact six. Mm-hmm.
So yeah. So back to the Coy's discussion yesterday. I mean, how so? He would say if you go below six, you're at zero.
If you go below six.
If you go below six, you're at zero. So that's not what you're saying, right? So what did you?
No, technically in the simulations, I can get artificial numbers.
Yeah.
Because I'm not completely well relaxed also,
yeah,
but I consider everything below six as unjammed.
Yeah.
And if I would wait long enough, I would go to zero.
Okay. Right. Okay.
Actually, yes, I would go to zero. Yeah. Run my molecular dynamics. And I don't do energy minimization here.
I mean, there's a parallel experimental issue, which is why I asked.
Mm-hmm. What is long enough? That's a good question, yes. Okay, anyway, now our referee was very angry with us because we used the dirty word J segment, which was introduced by some Italians. So we just used this word in our publication, and the referee shouted at us, why do they introduce a new word? He evidently didn't know this 5-year-old paper. But anyway, the message here is, this is jamming density as a variable now, and this is density, the maximum compression density of my protocol. Okay, so I open a range of accessible densities. Jamming densities, not density. Okay, this is the protocol maximum density which the soft packing has reached here. Okay, and the further I go away from this magic lowest lower limit point, we didn't find anything below. Okay, the further I go away, the wider it's opening. We'll probably continue.
Horizontal?
Y-axis is the jamming density. Okay. This is the protocol-dependent maximum density, or it's the number of tappings which you do. That's equivalent. So if you want to tap, or it's the temperature, if you want. That's all equivalent.
So this is the initial density that you start with?
No. This is the maximum density which I reach 100 times.
Okay.
Then I will set the jamming density here. If I choose 0.8 volume fraction and do it 100 times, I will be here. If I do it infinite many times, I will be here. And this is extrapolated. This line is extrapolated. We cannot do it infinite times. But this is a consistent with our data. Okay, so this is the infinite limit. So we expect, that's why there's an infinity here, you cannot see it. Okay, so we expect that this is the available range of jamming densities given a certain protocol. And which protocol that is not important as long as it is an isotropic protocol. No shear yet. Okay, so the response of the microstructure to isotropic deformations, that's what I told you, And what we think is, for the macroscopic point of view, you need a state variable which is taking into account this change of microstructure, and we just say the jamming density, the jamming volume fraction itself could be that one. Whether that's a good choice or not, one can discuss, but it's a convenient one, as I will show you in the next few slides. I mean, I like it, you don't have to like it, and actually it doesn't matter. The fabric tensor can be used, the pressure can be used, the coordination number can be used. They are all interconnected, and there is no new information if you use any of them. Okay, so jamming is defined in my case if I go below isostatic coordination number, then at p equals 0. I mean, that's what Corey told me I should consider this also. And actually, in molecular dynamics, p equals 0 is not very well defined. I think p equals 0 is quite artificial. So I want to say here, very close to 0, slightly above. Then I still can have a jammed system. If I am at p equals 0, I consider the system as already in the class of a dense fluid. Okay, but that's philosophy. Okay, what is important is, and this is the only thing which you have to believe me now, from now on it will be much simpler. I say, whatever I do to the system, isotropically the jamming point will slowly increase. This is the postulate which I now want you to accept for a few minutes. Okay?
Slowly increases with what? I'm sorry, as you do what?
Whatever you do.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, I skip the technical details.
Pardon? Whatever you do that is different from this isotropic protocol.
No, whatever I do, mm-hmm. which is isotropic, will increase the jamming point. Mm-hmm. And I have shown you one example of an isotropic cyclic protocol. But temperature also will play the same.
Now, just to mention, we have shown that even if you just start with fluid concentrations, starting at different distances, you do find a systematic.
Yes.
Consistent with
yeah.
What you
exactly.
You know, meaning, like, I just, you know, one thing that's a confusion is what protocol means. It doesn't have to mean anything that takes you too far away from systematic thermodynamics or systematic.
That's something which we have to discuss later because that's bringing us too far in the. Okay, too far away. Now, everything what I tell you also works for friction. I mean, everything what I tell you works for polydispersity. This is the width of the size distribution. So you have something like 0.64, that's the magic random close packing density if you are monodispersed, and if you are polydispersed, we just increase. These are hard spheres, these are soft spheres, and actually here it shows up already. This is isotropic deformation, this is the jamming density under isotropic deformation, and you will see later, if you do something other than isotropic, then you will get another jamming density. Okay, but now we talk about isotropic. That's the red line. Soft particles, that's the red line, not the hard particles of yours. I mean, your numbers should sit here, I think, but that's something to be discussed. Okay, now, and from now on, it will be very simple. I wanted to do this on the blackboard, but then I thought I'd do it technically with PowerPoint. Now, this is pressure and density. These are the parameters which I can control experimentally. Okay, and this is my system. It's sitting somewhere. It has zero pressure, so it's evidently unjammed. Okay, and as you can imagine, I want to increase density. So what will happen to the pressure when I do this? Okay, at the jamming point, I realize something is happening. Okay, and a lot of people in the room and upstairs have studied this point in much detail. I avoided that since 10 years. Because I find it more interesting to go a little bit above jamming. Okay, and then you can go above jamming. And this is now what I said before. The jamming point, this extrapolation to zero pressure, has now shifted while I was compressing. Okay, and I compress further. Okay, and now I have a state line in pressure density space, which has shifted. From the virgin system. Okay, and now I uncompress, and I will not stay exactly on the same line, but I will definitely not recover back this. I mean, there is much less happening when I uncompress than when I compress. Okay, so that's for the sake of simplicity, I just use this line. Okay? And if I do tapping, that's just the same. When I do tapping, the same will happen. And I could keep the pressure at low, at zero, close to zero, to satisfy Corey if he insists. So I could do tapping, and just the same will happen. So I have now a protocol, and my system has a history, but in the moment, the system will be on this state line, whatever I do next. Okay, now, there's always the question, what happens if you have different boundary conditions? So, isobaric boundary condition, and the system is sitting at a constant pressure. Okay, whatever I do to my system, tapping, temperature, compression, I cannot do anymore because that would change pressure. So now I have to do something else. Whatever I do, my...
But you're, these are only isotropic bodies. So you're not sharing. Yeah.
Up to now, isotropic. Okay, so my density will increase. And that's what you that's what you expect for tapping under constant pressure. I mean, that's the standard experiment which Corey showed. Isochoric. I don't know if you know this term. It sounds so Latin or Greek, but it's volume conserving. Okay, so whatever I do in a volume conserved test, that's close to the simple, the Pusiewicz Bob show, the system will decrease in pressure. And that's what you observe. Okay, so just by introducing this, the fact that the jamming point is moving and ignoring a lot of other complications, which I don't like, and keeping everything linear and so on, I have explained now some phenomenology. Okay, now, the second test is shear. And you can do cyclic shear or you can do simple shear. Actually, we copied, we mimicked the original Bulbul and Bob's paper. So this is cyclic shear. You shear up, you reverse, you shear down, and so on. Okay, you can do that. This is how it looks like. And since we had difficulties working with tau on the vertical axis, we just used the shear strain amplitude here, and we recover shear unjamming, we recover the fragile states, we recover the shear jammed states, but that's not what it is about. This is a... Okay, and now I will avoid Bob. This is just a side effect, and I have to explain you what I mean, because the motion of the jamming point is already something which comes now into play again. And you cannot see it from the data. What happens when you shear that is qualitatively different from what?
You shouldn't have offended me, Simon.
That's the revenge of PowerPoint.
So that's the Derringer part?
So that was the dangerous slide, evidently.
That's what you said, not what you said.
Okay. What happens and what is different? Under isotropic deformation, you increase the jamming point slow, and now what you have to accept, second element, if I shear, then in almost all cases, there are some cases where that not happens, I decrease the jamming point. Okay, and that's just opposite direction, and that's the only thing which we have. Okay, and slow means increasing the jamming point is really slow, logarithmically slow, and fast, exponentially fast. That's a qualitative difference, but you don't need that. And we reproduce percolation picture of Bulbul and Bob in three dimensions. It's the same as in two dimensions. The numbers are different, but qualitatively the same. We have something like a shear jamming diagram with shear jammed states, always jammed states, unavailable states, or unjammed states. Okay, but now, back to the simple picture. I have prepared my system, so I'm now on the solid line here. I have a volume conserving boundary condition, and I shear. So what happens? System just goes up in pressure. And that's continuing if I shear further. And actually now I will, at some point, if I shear long enough, volume conserving, then I will reach a steady state where the density and the pressure doesn't change anymore. Density doesn't change anyway. Okay, so this is now the critical state. It's a steady state, not a critical state. Okay, now isobaric, I do the same. I shear and I increase volume. I decrease density. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which is dilation.
Thank you. Which is called dilatancy. And so the latency is just a consequence of the moving of the jamming point. Or you can say the latency causes the jamming point to move, but I want to convince you of the opposite. The jamming point moves, and by the way, we have the latency. Okay. Now, isobaric shear. Isochoric shear change. Okay, now we come to shear jamming. I have this density here, which is the critical state shear density, which the system will reach after I shear it long enough at zero pressure. That's the special line here. That's why we called it phi SJ, but it's phi C, phi critical. Okay, and I have the system prepared such that it has, that it thinks it has this jamming density. And now I choose a volume which is in between the two. Okay, and since I shear, the jamming density will move down. And oops, the system is shear jammed after long enough shear. That's it. Okay, when I reverse, it will unjam, by the way. But that's okay, and now I have isobaric shear jamming. Isobaric is a little bit difficult if you have zero pressure. So you can keep zero pressure for a while, but as soon as you shear jam, you will have increase in pressure. So it's not strictly isobaric. Okay, and in that state now, in every state which is slightly above P, I want to make the point that we are elastic for a finite number of particles, finite pressure, and for a very small strain, we have an elastic regime. I think that's maybe disturbing or confusing some of the people. We always have an elastic regime, and with elastic I mean reversible regime, but it's tiny. Okay, and if I strain further, then I will have what people call plasticity or irreversible deformations. Okay, and that's this picture I showed already. This is a real simulation data for pressure density first cycle, and the blue line is the 100th cycle. So this is how things are changing, give you an idea. The lines are, by the way, not fits. They are prediction of a macroscopic constitutive model. And this is all parameters which you can measure in your system, including anisotropy somewhere here, up there. The brown line is anisotropy, structural anisotropy, during cyclic shear. And all the lines are predictions of the blue lines are predictions of a constitutive macroscopic model. Okay, and the only essential thing is, no, not the only thing. It's a little bit lengthy, I don't show you, but it has the change of jamming density involved. And that is needed to make all these parameters match. Without it, you get some of them right, but you don't get the complete picture. So by introducing a moving jamming point, going up or down, okay, by introducing a jamming point going up or down, I have the latency. I get the latency in a simple-minded picture. We have elasticity and plasticity irreversibility, which is represented by the motion of the jamming point, plasticity. Elasticity is staying on the line. Plasticity is moving the line, the state line. Okay, and shear jamming is actually, by the way, it exists, yes, under these protocols which I showed you, and it's just a consequence of the moving jamming point. Okay, and whether we use the jamming density as the necessary state variable or anything other, I didn't show you that. I can explain that with the microscopic model, but this was the macroscopic view, and I stop here. I promised too much. I said I could do that in 5 minutes.
Yeah. Awesome. No, it's great. Yeah.
When you do this long shear, especially the cyclic shear, isotropic compression, decompression, very often you actually introduce order, certain types of order in your system. By looking at only pressure, one scalar variable, so would you be able to really see what is going on in the packing inside?
Oh, you have to look at the whole picture, but right. That's not for this talk.
Okay.
Pressure was no the snapshots which I showed you, which I actually made within 1 hour
for example, if you use a poly dispersed system, it's very difficult to see those ordering event. But if you use a bidispersed model, you will see probably have a phase separation.
Yeah.
Maybe.
If you
under large strain, yeah. Shear strain. Yes.
Right.
But we checked for that, maybe not very carefully, and we don't see strong indications of that. The point is, we do not have a strong shear band localization, and if the shear band is localized, it doesn't stay there for very long, because we don't have walls. Our system has no reason to stay there. It's periodic boundary conditions. So we probably get away. In systems where the shear band is localized, in the ring shear cell, for example, we do see segregation of the size, yes. Okay, but these are complications which I have removed. Assume the system which I have remains more or less homogeneous. And that already allows me to tell the story. The microscopic details, you can look closer and closer and closer, and then you will see or not see. And in the systems I showed you, we did not see any ordering. We did not see shear band localization. That doesn't mean it's not there. We just didn't see it. I mean, permanent shear band localization, staying at the same position. There are some short shear bands. There are some tiny avalanches, which you could say, but we didn't analyze those. There is everything ongoing, which is already related to all the other talks. But the message was, you have one state variable, you have a state line, the state line is shifting, and that explains about everything which I find interesting with granular materials.
So I think the idea that we have jamming densities that extend over a line rather than a jet point is this I agree with. The association of what the different ends of that line correspond to, I think, is the part of your work which is not clear to me. So in particular, so instead of talking at length, I guess the one thing that frictional spheres have is the presence of a jump in the yield stress at this shear jamming point, which you wouldn't have ideally. Or is that something that we can?
Which jump in yield stress?
So
if you look at the tau phi phase diagram,
yes.
The yield line ends at a finite.
So this is tau. The green line is tau.
Okay, this has too much.
Sorry, no, just here. Look, this is tau over P.
Yeah.
Shear stress over pressure from the DM simulation. So, what do you want to know?
So
I can show you everything, but you don't have to look at the rest.
As you break, it would be helpful if you went back to his diagram that you showed this morning and from the last Yeah.
This one.
Okay,
yeah. It's not Bob's diagram.
No, this is a little bit. But you showed it, I thought, in the beginning.
Nope.
Maybe I'm confused. But the point is, if you're looking at yielding as a function of density coming from below, the frictional spheres at the shear jamming point, you have a finite yield stress, right? And this is different from frictionless spheres.
No, well, frictionless spheres.
So he doesn't have a yield stress on that picture.
No,
right. No,
because it's shear strain. But look, when I strain to this point, then I have reached my yield. Then I have a finite shear stress. When I shear further, maybe to this dashed line, then I have reached the maximum shear stress, which I get. And if I shear further, then I will get a constant shear stress.
Okay. Now, so I'm asking if you identify this so-called
by SJ as the result?
Yeah, in like 1 minute. I think the next 40
seconds. We identify this phi SJ as the lowest jam density that you can get, which is what I guess it brings, then it doesn't correspond to the phi SJ that people
it does from the perspective of the strain diverging at that point.
No, but in terms of yield stress, that's why I said.
Yeah, so I don't know what that is, so I think we should just. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, under this point is the only relevant point, I think.
Yeah.
Random close pecking, random loose pecking are not relevant. This is the only one, and this is the critical state in the limit of zero pressure. That's the only fixed point. All others are protocol dependent. And I make a strong statement now, and I'm 100% sure.
Great. And I think what Sri is asking is, if I did this for friction now, then we have a finite yield stress at that point.
But you still will have one point that will have another number.
One point. That's not.
All right. Okay. I'm afraid, we have to get the new work. Let's thank them both again and continue.